Okay, so I have Brad Butt from MBOT, Michael Casey from MTO, Daryl Shipp is with us, Daryl Van Morsel, Heather Craig Petty, Councillor Kerry Giannis, John Davidson, Jonathan Weedle, Ludwig's with us, Matt McNama, Oscar Rodriguez, he's our new member. Welcome, Oscar. Dave Carco. Caroline is with us. Sabir Savick, Shane Raymond, Stephen Tufts, Walter Garrison, Bram Westfall. And there's also a 727-0142.
Bedar Shannon.
Oh, hi, Bedar. Chris Fonseca, as well as Joe.
It
looks like we have a full house.
Perfect. Thank you, Ingrid. Anyone that we didn't that call out that's on the call and we should acknowledge? I know, Ingrid, you mentioned Oscar's new to the group, Oscar Rodriguez from Brampton. So I don't know, Oscar, do you want to say a bit about yourself, kind of introduce yourself to the group?
Hi, Michael. How are you? Thank you for having me. The camera is on, so I don't get a chance to, you know, see everybody, but it's looking forward to participating. Some background work in at the airport, just what I contribute, take it up then, and hopefully I can bring some good points to discuss.
Perfect. Yeah, we're really happy to have you from the city of Brampton.
Oh, and
so if I could ask everyone.
Sorry, Michael. Michael Casey is also new as well. He's replacing Cheryl Clark, I believe, right?
That's correct. Hi, everybody. I'm Mike Casey. I am, expect within the next month or so, I will be taking over the manager position that Cheryl Clark left behind for MTO. So I'll be sitting as the manager for MTO as the resource. Thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to catching up on what this group is doing and, you know, big support is needed.
Perfect. Yeah, if I can ask everyone just to mute their microphone. If you're not talking, you can mute yourselves. Just, I find there's with Teams, there ends up being an echo, as you can hear. It's an echo. So if everyone can just mute.
Hi, everybody. It's good to see you all.
So, Lori, we've just kind of ran through who's on the call and introduced a few new folks. There's Oscar Rodriguez, you can see there, and Michael Casey. And we were just about to get into the agenda.
My apologies for being late. I think what we find in this new world of Zoom and Teams and virtual meetings, there is no travel time between meetings anymore. They go from, you know, one ending at 4 o'clock and the other one starting at 4 o'clock. So you don't get a break at all. So my apologies for being a bit late. Michael, did you have a chance to mention the other new members we have? I know Brad Butt is joining from the Mississauga Board of Trade in replace of David Wojcik.
No, Brad didn't get a chance to introduce himself just yet. I guess we know Brad so well that I think of him as a friend, you know? So maybe you can say a few things.
Well, thank you for the invitation to join you. We'll leave it at that.
Great to see you, Brad, and we are very happy to have you amongst us. All right, so according to my notes, we have a few new resource members as well, Michael. So Walter Garrison is joining us today, and Walter is the manager of Systems Policy Office with MTO. Is that correct? Walter's there? Is that you, Michael?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. So we don't have Walter. All right. Yeah. So then I think that's that's it in terms of new members. I hope everyone, just maybe by way of opening, is keeping well and adjusting to all our new ways of communicating and working. I think probably every organization that's part of our meeting today has probably had their world turned upside down to a certain extent. I know that's true for us at the airport, and so our plans is to share with you a little bit about what we've been experiencing since COVID struck at the middle of March, and so we've got a presentation to run through with you. Sorry, there is a bit of echo. I don't know if we can just remind everyone on the to mute their phones. We did send out the minutes from our December 3rd meeting. So again, this is going to be interesting to do. I'm going to just ask if I can have somebody to just, I'll give a quick 10 seconds if anyone has any concerns or issues related to the minutes that were circulated. All right, so hearing none, what I'll do is ask for a motion to approve the minutes from December the 3rd. Somebody who was at the December 3rd meeting can pipe up. Jonathan, were you there?
Yes, I was, and I was just trying to get my camera going. Excuse me. So, hello, everyone.
Hi, great to see you.
Yes.
All right, so Jonathan moved, and if we can have a seconder, please.
Sabir, I can do that. I can second the meeting.
Great. Thank you, Sabir. So then, any opposed to approving our minutes from our last meeting? Hearing none, they're carried. We also circulated the agenda for today's meeting in advance. Does anyone have any additional items that they wanted to include in today's meeting? All right, hearing none, we'll carry forward with our agenda as it was circulated. We do have a few matters arising from our previous minutes. And we just always, our practice is when we have presentations that are sent out after our meetings, those links are provided to all members. And so that was sent out, and there was a white paper and a call proposals that was circulated after our last meeting. It feels like a lifetime ago, but that was circulated and sent to committee members on December the 4th, so that was late last year. Okay, Michael, I'm going to turn it over to you at this point and ask you if you can just provide some highlights from our consultative committee update, and that was circulated to all of you.
Michael, you're on mute.
Sorry. So I was just saying, for those who are new, the consultative committee update is a bit of a newsletter that goes out ahead of each consultative committee meeting, just trying to keep you up to date on what's happening, the latest and greatest at the airport. So I think there's a lot of good articles in this edition. I won't spend too much time on Toronto Pearson COVID impacts and stats, the government advocacy that we're doing, and the healthy airport initiatives that are underway, because I know that'll be covered in our presentation. But suffice to say, I think COVID-19 has been devastating for the entire air ecosystem. We've been talking to every level of government about short and long-term stimulus we need if the airport's going to continue to be a national economic asset that we all know it to be. And we're carefully planning and implementing healthy airport measures. So we'll share that with you today. I would say if there's any good news, and there was an article in the update about air cargo. So air cargo activity at the airport's up at the moment. We held a round table in April with the Ontario Chamber of Commerce, Minister Fedeli, our new president, right, relatively new president, CEO Deborah Flint. So I'd encourage you to look at the results of that round table, and there's a synopsis that we circulated as part of the newsletter. And we have another round table that's coming up, similar type round table federally. So looking forward to that. The world's largest plane, the Antonov, landed at Toronto Pearson, I believe last week, carrying PPE and medical supplies, and Ontario's ministers of finance and transportation were there to greet it. So that's a good news story. We've launched the Airport Explorers Club, which is a free interactive tool we've rolled out to introduce kids to all the fascinating things happening at Toronto Pearson. So there's an interview there with Minister Garneau. We just interviewed Minister Mulrooney. Minister McKenna is on the way. So if you have kids, it's worth taking a look at, or if you know someone who does. And then finally, I'd say for the new members, there's an article about our annual public meeting. It's worth checking out. You can see a live replay of that. That's kind of where I leave it.
Great. Thanks so much, Michael. Anyone have any questions of Michael and the update that was circulated? All right, so we're going to move into the discussion items on our agenda today. So the first item on our agenda, so we thought we would take some time just to walk through with all of you the impacts that COVID has had on air travel, and in particular Toronto Pearson, and some of the measures that we are putting in place as we get ready for restart. There, you know, we continue to have some operations at the airport, but as Michael says, it's been pretty devastating for us. So I'm going to run through a few slides. Michael's going to pick up and carry through some others. And then another colleague of ours, Brittany Maxwell, has joined us today, and she's going to walk through the measures that we are putting in place for what we call our healthy airport. Airport's always been a healthy place, but I think in a post-COVID world, the requirements for us to demonstrate that we're taking every measure and putting in place every initiative and procedure to protect the health and safety of our workforce, the traveler, and to make sure that we're doing everything we can do to prevent the spread of COVID is critical for us to be able to move to restarting our operations in, you know, the similar volumes that we have seen in the past. So everybody on this call knows the economic role and importance that Pearson has played for Ontario, for Toronto, this region, and the country. The number of jobs that the airport supports, the trade and travel and global connectivity that it provided pre-COVID, something that is greatly missed right now from an economic perspective. But as we put health first, and we completely appreciate and understand and support the decisions that have been made by governments to protect our communities, we also know that those have had massive impacts on every sector going, but in particular, they've been, you know, the restrictions have been very focused on air travel, and so we've had particular impacts. So we'll just go to the first slide. Michael, am I driving now, or is someone else?
Ingrid's going to drive, and then you can just...
Perfect.
Yeah.
So one of the things that, if you have had the opportunity to go to the airport, that you will notice as soon as you walk through the doors is it looks a bit more like a movie set, and our airfield looks more like a parking lot in the Arizona desert than it does look like anything you would have remembered from before. The building is fairly empty. We had one of our busiest days in the last week than we've had since the middle of March. And so we are starting to see some traffic resume, but that's mainly in the domestic area because the restrictions on international travel and travel to the United States continue to be in place, and quarantine rules continue to be in place, which is a huge disincentive to travel. But the airport truly is a very different place than it was just a few months ago. Next slide, Ingrid. So this is a slide, and I hope you can see it. I'm sorry, I don't know if there's a way to move to a projection mode or a bit larger, Ingrid. But this is put together by the Canadian Airports Council, which is our association for airports in Canada. And they've taken a look at the impacts that COVID has had across the whole system. Now, I say 57% is the drop in passenger traffic that we've seen. But you have to remember that that includes January, February, and half of March. And those months, while we did at Pearson see some restrictions in drop in traffic because COVID at that point was starting to hit some of the Asian countries and we were starting to see some reductions in travel, for the most part, we didn't really see the drop off in travel in a severe way until the middle of March. And so we hit bottom in April, and we're going to go into some specific numbers for Pearson in April. What's super telling about this chart is the horizontal line, and you can see that's at the 0% level. So based on a low, medium, and a high forecast in terms of traffic rebounding, the expectation is that travel will not fully resume to 2019 levels until probably around 2024. So unlike hits and economic downturns we've seen in the past where we've had what we would call a V drop and then recovery, what our expectation is, because this is not just a health pandemic, but it's a health pandemic that's now also become a global recession. We expect this to be more like a U, where we expect traffic to hover down at the bottom for a while and then only slowly start to grow. It's also key to point out the fact that this curve assumes that there is a commercial vaccine available by 2021. And while we are beginning to hear more about fast and reliable tests for COVID and how those may be able to help us support restart of travel, we are diving into and looking at very closely. Immunity passports or immunity checks or vaccines or cures, those are further away. But it's important to note that there's an assumption built into this chart about there being an available vaccine. The revenue hit across the country for airports is about $2 billion, and that does have an impact on our earnings. And there is a concern, many airports do have, because of our model, which we're going to go into in a second, we do go to the markets and borrow against our revenue streams. We are private, not-for-profit organizations, and so as a result, we do have covenants with our lenders. And so one of the challenges that we do face across the country is running up against those covenants and breaching those with our lenders. So, next slide, Ingrid. So, I think many of you know this, but it's worth a reminder, is the structure of airport authorities in Canada is we are not-for-profit, non-share capital corporations. We don't have shareholders. While we're not-for-profit, it doesn't mean we don't make money. It just means that our the profits we do make need to be invested back into the airport. When our traffic falls off the way it has, given the dependence that our revenue stream has on traveler and traveler spending money, it really does have a massive impact. We have three sources of revenue as an organization. One is the aeronautical revenues that we collect, and those are the landing fees that airlines pay when they arrive at Pearson. The second non-aeronautical revenue, so that's our food and beverage, our retail operations, parking, so is that travelers spend in the course of their travel, and that's our non-aeronautical revenue. And then the third bucket is the airport improvement fee. That's on a ticket, a per ticket charge that's dedicated for airport infrastructure development. And so as airports were moved to these not-for-profit, non-share capital corporations, and Pearson was transferred in 1996, the costs associated with building new infrastructure was also passed over to these entities, the GTAA, and so we are required to make the investments in new facilities, and so we do collect an airport improvement fee on tickets. That money is then used for investments in facilities. And so with no passengers, no ticket sales, obviously that revenue stream has dried up as well. So just a reminder, there's been conversations that, you know, you're a big company, you clearly and surely have lots of money. It's a stark reminder that when passenger traffic dries up, so do our revenue streams. So, next slide. So here's where I'm going to turn this over to you, Michael, and Michael's just going to talk more specifically about the impacts that COVID's had, particularly at Pearson, and then Brittany will pick up and take on to talk about the health measures we're putting in place.
Thanks, Laurie. So in terms of Toronto Pearson specific impacts, I don't think it can really be overstated that, like I said, that the pandemic has been nothing short of devastating for really the whole air ecosystem. You know, passenger traffic at Toronto Pearson is down 98% year over year for the month of April. If we typically had 1,300 flights on average in a given day, now we're at roughly 150. And so obviously you can't suffer those kind of losses as an airport without there being a ripple effect. You know, every part of the business has been impacted. So food and beverage and retail, parking transactions, taxi and limo trips, they're all down over 90%. Our business partners have had to lay off 11,000 plus people. So, and that touches really every part of our business. So you can flip to the next slide. So I guess no surprise, you know, with those kind of impacts, it affects your bottom line. Revenues are down 53% year over year for the month of April. We've had to respond, and of course you'd expect us to respond with our own efficiency measures. So we're reducing the airport's planned and operating capital spend for 2020. I should say, you know, one of the pieces of the capital program that is going forward is we had planned runway maintenance, so that will go forward and take advantage of this low traffic period, and it's a jobs creator as well. I think it creates about 450 jobs. But wherever possible, we're reducing the airport's planned and operating capital spend. And to further reduce costs, you know, we've implemented area closures throughout Terminal 1 and Terminal 3, consolidating, you know, wherever possible there. And we just look to continue to create efficiencies and restore trust in travel. And that, you know, in a big way will be these healthy airport measures. So much of the back half of this presentation is dedicated to that. So the next slide. So we've been out talking to every level of government about short-term relief and the longer-term stimulus that's needed to restore trust in air travel and get us back to operating as that the economic asset that everyone expects us to be. The federal government, for their part, so they've offered rent relief for airports for the remainder of 2020, but you know, we're looking to have that extended to future years, so 2021, 2022, as an example. It would get, just doing that would give us the flexibility to plan forward, which we need, and just make the investments that people expect. Lori mentioned in terminal infrastructure, but also in, I think a lot of people think of the airport as investing in the community and our surrounding communities. So just to have that flexibility as well. We're also talking to the federal government about backstopping and stepping in on loan, with loan and bond guarantees. So preserving our good standing with creditors, you know, providing that liquidity and stability for the airport, and just ensuring that our covenants remain intact and mitigating that risk of a breach that way. So the next slide. So in terms of our asks, you know, at various levels of government, we've been taking advantage of the tax relief and deferrals on offer. So you can see that with the CRA tax support for businesses federally, provincially, you know, there's deferrals for the HST, WSIB payments. So we're taking advantage of that wherever we can. Lori might want to jump in here too, but she co-led and has been co-leading an airport and airlines panel at the that's reporting to Minister McLeod. So you can see some of the recommendation that flowing from that panel.
Michael, I will jump in if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
On the federal level, we probably should have also included the fact that we have applied for the wage subsidy program. And so we, based on the eligibility criteria that the federal government established, we believe we'll probably be eligible out through to the end of the program, which now runs through till the end of August. So to date, we've applied for March and April. It's half a month of March and for April, and we're getting ready to put in our application for the month of May as well. So that is a program that we are making use of. We have looked at the commercial rent program as well. When that was issued by the Government of Canada, we had already put in place our deferral program with our tenants and providing them a three-month deferral for their payments and rents. One thing that's of particular note, though, is most of our tenants are not eligible for that program the way it's been structured by the Government of Canada. It's something in the magnitude of only about 20% would be eligible in any case, given the size of our tenants. And so we'll continue to look at it, but because we already had our own program in place for our tenants, it was not something that we felt was going to be any advantage for us. Michael's mentioned this, so this is a process that the province of Ontario put together to hear from various sectors about the impact that COVID has had on their business. There was, through the tourism minister, Minister McLeod, an aviation panel, and it was co-led by an airport and an airline, and cross Ontario participation. Our report has been submitted to the province. One of the things we very strongly are recommending to both the federal government but also at the provincial level is for unified health standards and protocols. If we're looking to build trust in aviation, we need to make sure that the process that happens as a passenger in Calgary is the same as the process that happens at Pearson. It's the same that happens on WestJet as it happens on Air Canada. It's the same that happened, ultimately the goal will be just like we had after 9/11 and security screening standards, it's the same that, or at least comparable mutually accepted process that happens when you're in Italy as it happens when you're in Canada. And so unified health standards, it goes a long way to rebuilding trust among travelers. There's also a number of initiatives that we've recommended to the province to help support and stimulate travel. We've seen the Government of Canada redirect international marketing dollars for tourism to support Destinations Canada and a campaign for encouraging Canadians to travel at home this summer. And the same is being recommended at the provincial level. We're all dying to get outside, and so if we can spend our money within Canada, within Ontario this summer, we're being encouraged to do so, and create some tax incentives to support and encourage us all to do that. The province did put in place these provincially significant employment zones. We're recommending to the province that they take a look at these zones in a way that helps to support recovery. We've seen global examples where lands around airports are used with land uses and ways that help to support the operations of an airport. There's a large number of employees in the airport employment zone, and largely the lands around Pearson are protected as employment lands. PZ, as they call them, is another tool that we're looking to as a way to help support recovery in the airport business. Arrivals duty free is something we always ask for. You can see it on the right hand side, so help to promote travel and tourists to buy those made in Ontario, made in Canada products and services. Also, as governments turn their minds to stimulus and getting people back to work by funding projects. We're looking at an opportunity for the government to support the redevelopment of Terminal 3. One of the challenges we're facing is not only, you know, with our revenue stream being cut and our ability not to advance projects that had previously been ready to go, but we now have to think about delivering those projects in different ways and revisiting them somewhat. So we make sure that processes are no touch or low touch to deal with limiting or eliminating the spread of COVID. And so moving towards processes in Terminal 3 that mirror what we have in Terminal 1, but also do so in a way that are touch-free or touchless. And border modernization, we keep hearing from government how this has been a significant opportunity in such a, you know, it's a negative, challenging time, but we've seen governments and companies digitize and bring in innovative processes to do things differently. So as we look at how we move people through our borders, how we can use biometrics, how we can use facial recognition, things that have been done in other countries around the world and things we've been talking about with our governments for a while now, we really would encouraging them to advance more quickly, because it has multiple benefits for us from the COVID perspective, but also from just an efficiency perspective and maintaining safety and security. So Michael, back to you.
Okay, so the next slide. So I know we've been talking a lot about impacts and advocacy with government, a lot of challenging and difficult news in the first half of that deck. I would say if there's a piece of good news, it's that our cargo operations are up. So you can see they're up 9% Q1 over 2019. That's a number of ad hoc cargo flights. I think for a while at the onset of COVID-19, we were focused on repatriating travelers and then somewhat pivoted just to with a more of a focus on cargo and just the supply chain aspect that many people, people definitely think about Toronto Pearson that way, but we've been more focused on supply chain and getting critical goods to market, like everything that you would think about, you know, PPE, medical supplies, food, as examples. So, just really amplifying Toronto Pearson's role as a critical role in the supply chain. The next slide. So the whole back half of the presentation here, next few slides, is dedicated to, we've been doing a lot of careful thinking, and now we're starting to implement some what we're calling a healthy airport initiatives. And so it's just, you'll hear us talk a lot about restoring confidence in air travel and trust in air travel, and really that's the most important thing if we're going to get people back to the airport and traveling again. So this slide speaks to, I would say, where we're at and where we've been for some time in terms of those, healthy airport measures currently. So in terms of what's in place and what has been in place, airlines are required to do a passenger and health assessment from the final port at the final point of departure. Face coverings must be worn by passengers in all public areas of the airport and during flights. All incoming passengers must provide a 14-day quarantine plan upon arrival in Canada. So it's that obligation to self-quarantine. And so the next few slides are going to get into some of the measures that we're rolling out now as part of this Healthy Airport Initiative. And Brittany Maxwell, a colleague in the Public Affairs Department, she's been really close to these initiatives, so she's going to walk you through it.
Thanks, Michael. Hi, everyone. My name is Brittany, and I work with Lori and Michael in the Public Affairs team. If you could transition to the next slide. Like Lori was talking about previously, building confidence for travel is going to take a coordinated approach with government and airlines and our airport partners. And the key to building the confidence is consistency, so that passengers know what to expect, whether they're traveling within Canada or abroad when government restrictions are lifted. And they need to know that Canada's aviation system is safe and aligned with the global protocols. At Toronto Pearson specifically, we're building health into the core of our business alongside our traditional safety and security roles, and really putting a focus on measures that will improve minimum touch processes. A safe and healthy airport supports the recovery of travel and tourism industry for when passenger traffic and commercial traffic does return at a more substantial rate. And we're focused not only on protecting the health of our workers, but also ensuring that the returning workforce is prepared and trained for the new normal as they get recalled to rejoin our Toronto Pearson employee community. And then we continue to look at the future to explore technologies that integrate health into our business. As we were talking about, some of the biometric processes for border modernization that we'd like the government to explore, and then you know, even technologies that assist with more current disinfecting technology. Those are some of the key pieces that we're thinking about as we've been building out these measures and looking forward to what's coming next. Ingrid, if you could go to the next slide. So these are the core principles of the program that's been rolled out to date. For masks, we're making it mandatory for everybody to protect themselves with a mask or face covering on airport property. This includes passengers and airport workers. And we really believe that this is a measure that's going to restore confidence with our employees and passengers to protect themselves and ensure that we're protecting against any of the COVID-19 respiratory transmissions. For physical distancing, we have implemented measures across the airport to enable a 6-foot or 2-meter distance and to minimize interactions that are unnecessary between staff and passengers. So as is listed on the slides, you'll hear that we have implemented plexiglass barriers wherever possible, increased space and installed floor decals to ensure that people know what the appropriate distance between them is. We've reduced the amount of seating and kiosks available for use, and we have rolled out a very robust informational campaign on site and terminal with all of this information. I think it's to the tune of 5,000 signs and decals throughout the buildings. So and that will continue as we continue to ramp up our operations as well. For terminal access, we've decided to limit the number of people in the terminal to those traveling and those working. And this is going to help minimize the risk of a large public space. Of course, there are exceptions for those providing disability assistance or accompanying a minor who is traveling alone. So this particularly means that people who are coming to meet and greet their loved ones from a flight or to see them off are asked not to enter the terminal. And we've done this through specific door access by limiting the entry points into the buildings. For hygiene and cleaning, tons and tons of work has gone into ramping up our cleaning and disinfecting throughout all public spaces, including some upgrades to our air filtration systems. And this is all of the high touch surfaces and high traffic areas. And we've done so much work to figure out what the right cleaning solutions are, how frequently they should be used, how they should be used, just to make sure that we're in a space that is up to the highest standard. And additionally, as Lori's mentioned before, we continue to work with our partners to implement technologies and change processes to minimize touch points between staff and passengers and as much as possible. You can go to the next slide, Ingrid. These are just a few examples of what the airport looks like today. I'm not going to run through every single one, but the visuals speak for themselves. So you can see the counters that are closed, the floor decals on the floor decals installed to help ensure in areas of queuing that people are aware of how close they are to one another. We do continue to work with our groundside transportation team to work on curbside management as people are coming and leaving the airport. You can see the reduced seating and the cleaning going on. And there's a few more examples on the next slide if you want to shift to that one. And again, visuals just speak for themselves. You can see all of these measures are in place, not only in seating and queuing areas, but the cleaning is happening as well for all of the kiosks where passengers are required to use them for declarations or checking in or anything like that. We do have a virtual customer service now, and it's been implemented for a while, in addition to a live and that's available on our customer service page of our website. And we are doing the PA announcements throughout the building with reminders of all of these new health and safety expectations. On the next slide, this is just, you know, a few key points about Pearson leading on airport health and safety. We know that the changes to address health are going to be part of travel moving forward. We're playing a leadership role within the airport community to ensure that everyone is considering all parts of the passenger and worker journeys as we implement these new measures to keep everyone healthy. These measures are currently aligned with Transport Canada and international standards through IATA and ICAO. And we continue to look to the future to work with regulators to gain their support to introduce new technologies as the world of travel changes and innovates. And we're doing our research to ensure that Toronto Pearson is prepared and aligned globally to participate in safe route opportunities as air travel confidence is restored and people start looking at city pairings, possibly like the Australia and New Zealand travel bubble example. So I think with that, that's everything that I had to say. I don't know if Lori or Michael wants to jump in.
Thank you very much, Michael and Brittany. Excellent presentation. I think you'll agree, everybody. So I think what we'll do now is just open it up to any questions that the committee might have. There's a couple of ways you can ask your question. There is an opportunity to put up your hand and let us know you have a question. Come off mic if there's silence and you want to jump in, or there is a chat function, and please feel free if you'd like to type in a question, and I'm happy to read it out for the group, and then we can help to get it answered. So I'll open it up to questions. Am I seeing none? All right. Well, if we have no questions.
I saw Michael Casey's hand put up his hand.
Was that? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't.
No, he put up his hand in the chat.
Oh. Okay, Michael, over to you.
First time I've used the put up your hand function, so clearly it was as confusing to everybody else as it was to me. My only question was around the makeup of your cargo flights. So I saw that your cargo volumes have gone up, but overall flights are still way, way down. Does that mean the makeup of your cargo flights is much different, and you're getting more revenues from basically charter freight flights rather than from basically passenger movement based flights?
Yeah, that's a great question, Michael. So most of the cargo that Pearson pre-COVID was in the underbelly of passenger aircraft. So about 70% of our cargo was part of that passenger flight. And we had much smaller number of what we would call all cargo flights, where it was a dedicated cargo flight. What we've seen change as, you know, goods needed to continue to move and the economy continue to operate, we've seen airlines and companies look for ways to move their goods. And so we've seen the retrofitting of passenger aircraft. The 777 is a great example, where they've pulled the seats out and they've been using those aircraft to move goods. We've also just seen a general uptick in the number of all cargo movements. So I think if I've got the numbers in my head correct, we used to see approximately, you know, about 65 movements per week. We're seeing more in the neighborhood of about 130 all cargo movements. And what's on those planes? I mean, what moves by air is traditionally that high value, perishable type products. So, pharmaceuticals and flowers and foods, component parts for high tech and computers. We have definitely seen a demand for the movement of PPE and supplies related to fighting COVID in terms of medical and pharmaceutical. And so that's been a significantly important part of the role that Pearson and airlines have been playing to keep that movement of products and services needed to help fight COVID. And so when Michael mentioned the Antonov that came in two Saturdays ago now, I mean, that was largely carrying PPE for the region. Caroline, you've got your hand up. Please go ahead.
Hi, Lori. Hi, everyone. One of the things that I didn't see in the presentation, and it's not a fun question to ask, but I'm going to do it anyway. In a lot of our other conversations, mainly with people like business improvement areas and retail malls, you know, they're looking at what does their tenant profile look like post-COVID. And I didn't see any sort of reference to that at all. And I'm hoping that that's a very, very good sign. But just wondering, you know, how that plays out in your longer term plans, knowing how long and painful this recovery is going to be for your organization in the airline industry.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that there's lots of work happening through our finance group in terms of working with our tenants. As I mentioned, we do have a program in place that defers their payments of rent through till July. But we're working closely with all of our tenants in terms of their operations. Had some restart of operations, so food and beverage and retails in a small way have begun to reopen following the provincial guidelines related to street side, and so some of that's starting it. But it is a very close. I haven't seen anything from my colleagues at this point that starts to reprofile, as you called it, in terms of our tenants. We're continuing to work with them all, though. I mean, we do expect, as you noted, that recovery will be slow, but we're hopeful that we'll be able to hang on to the tenants that we have and move forward.
Thanks, Lori. I hope everything works out.
Yeah. Councillor Karygiannis, I think your hand is up now.
Thank you. What measures do we have in place for people that are coming back from overseas? I mean, when you travel overseas right now, you see people being tested, you see people that are being, their temperatures have been taken. Have we got anything like this? I mean, when people are landing in Toronto, that we test them on the site to see if they're COVID-free, temperatures, and do we have anything along those lines?
Sure. So the measures that you're talking about are put in place by the Government of Canada. So currently, the interim orders that are in place by Transport Canada, it requires that the all passengers are questioned at their last point of departure, and there's a series of health questions that they're asked before they're permitted to board the aircraft. Toronto Pearson is one of four airports that was identified early on that continues to see international flights arriving. And so we have been seeing flights in terms of repatriation and connections over Toronto in terms of repatriations, but it is only essential travel right now. The other measure that's in place is when a passenger arrives into the customs hall, they are asked a similar series of questions by Canada Border Services Agency. And if there are any issues raised, then Public Health Agency of Canada is on site at Pearson, and their protocols would then kick in. The passenger would be redirected to PHAC to ensure that that passenger, you know, can be allowed into the community. And if there's a requirement for, you know, they have to have their own quarantine plan, because then anyone arriving internationally has to abide by the 14-day quarantine that's in place under the Quarantines Act. And if an individual doesn't have their own plan to do so, then they are put up by PHAC in local accommodations. They've got some hotels near the airport that they've been using. Does that answer your question, Councillor?
Further question goes that we depend on the answer of the individual. We have absolutely no measures in place to test their temperature or to test them if they're COVID-free, according to Transport Canada. We depend on them.
That's where we're at the moment. You are right, though. There are, we are watching as other governments and countries put in place temperature checks. We do have 6 of the carriers that operate at Pearson are taking temperatures as passengers depart. We are in conversation with Transport Canada and officials about rolling out temperature checks at Canadian airports. And we're also really watching closely as the world starts to grapple with the ability for us to have a reliable and quick COVID test. I was speaking with a number of airports across the world earlier today. I mean, Hong Kong is a great example where COVID tests are happening. Paris, Charles de Gaulle is starting to have tests where they're doing a COVID test passengers for travel in what's considered a safe travel bubble.
Is there something in the short term, long term, whatever, that Canada Transportation Agency has advised us that they will be looking to test people? Or is this, I mean, look, I'll be very frank here, and I do apologize. When SARS hit, I was at the epicenter. My constituency as a member of parliament was at the epicenter. At that time, we put testing in place of temperatures coming into Canada. When I mentioned the same thing to the current member of parliament that replaced me after I left federal politics, I was advised that Theresa Tom said that, well, you know, we cost us $7 million to implement back then. It didn't really do anything, so we shouldn't do it again. So something like 8,000 deaths later, did we serve our public right? So my question is, is there something that we're doing? Is there something that we, as the airport, is asking the federal government that we want done? I mean, there's places in Europe that test their people with COVID-19, as you said, that as soon as they land. Why are we not following the same protocols?
Can I jump in here, please?
I think that there's an opportunity for us to approach this in a layered way. I think everyone agrees that there's no silver bullet, and that one measure alone is not going to create a healthy system, that multiple layers are going to be required. The Airport Authority, Toronto Pearson, we do very much support the addition of temperature check for departing passengers and for arriving passengers, and that's underway. And I see that my colleague from Transport Canada, Ludwig, has his hand up, so maybe I'll let him jump in here and speak directly on behalf of the
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Councillor Jimmy Kay, hi, how are you? It's Ludwig. As you know, these things take a little bit of coordination and a little bit of time, but I can assure you and the Consultative Committee that the Government of Canada, in a joint and coordinated way, is working with governments across the world to ensure point of departure testing so that incoming passengers are clear. However, we too have to implement the same protocols from a public health as well as a security point of view. So I can assure you that there is work underway right now. I'm not a part of it, but my colleagues up in Ottawa are very engaged with the international community airports, airlines, as well as public health and government officials to put in place the kinds of measures that we had post 9/11, post SARS. I think in time to come, and off the record year, we will probably see the kind of screening additive that is a part of going through customs procedures at any airport in Canada in the future. It's coming.
Ludwig, I thank you. You and I go back years ago, so I'm going to be very frank and to the point. I think the folks up in Ottawa have failed us, but that's my point of view. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you, folks.
Lori Walter has a question in the chat.
Yeah, hi, it's Walter Garrison, City of Mississauga, Economic Development Office. I'm just interested in the maintenance, repair, and overhaul organizations on site of Pearson, because you talked about the mitigation measures that you're putting in place. Are the organizations like Air Canada that have large maintenance operations, I know that traffic is substantially less, is there a common standard of, I guess, PPE amongst different organizations, or could you shed any further light on that? Thank you.
Yeah, so our requirement for masks is mandatory across the whole property, and so that's required for our employees, it's required by Transport Canada for passengers, and it's required by us, the GTA, for all of our tenants and their workforces, so it would apply to Air Canada's on-site as well.
Okay, great, thank you.
I think there's another question in the John Davidson. Oh, sorry. No, he's just telling us that he had to leave a meeting, leave at 5 o'clock. All right. So it is 5 o'clock and we've been an hour on this one item. So I would, unless there's a burning question, like to move to our next update. It's among on. Vic, do you have something else you want to say?
No, point taken.
You need to put your hand down.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
Hi. Wow.
We're all learning this, aren't we? So then what our next item on the agenda, it's all related. What we really wanted to understand and learn from each of you was how your organizations are managing with COVID. So what we did is we sent out a slide which we asked you to document or fill in, if you will. And so we're just going to go through these and ask each of you just to step in and share the content of your own slides. So I'm going to go on mute and let Ingrid, you take over.
Yeah, so I think Councillor Kerr Janice, we have you up first, reporting on the City of Toronto's impacts and to your particular ward.
Well, thank you. Look, I mean, to be very frank, the City of Toronto is losing $65 million a week. We're one of the hotspots. The vulnerability of the seniors, especially the old age homes, and seeing what happened there. We use the old age homes as a warehouse for seniors, and if somebody dies, we, you know, let's just fill the bed with a sex person. In my part of the world, we're all closed except essential services. Because of COVID-19 and job loss, we increased the use of food banks. I have 3 food banks, and they are busy. We have numerous donations of businesses stepping up to provide PPE and hot meals for the hospitals and staff. We have had so far about 6 PPE drives where close to about 350, 400 cars of people coming by to receive hand sanitizers and face masks. This morning alone, I was at an old folks' home and delivered 900 masks, 120 shields, face shields, and hand sanitizers. The recovery, as we're seeing it through the City of Toronto, there's going to be $575 million reduction to TDC. Services on Lane 1 and 2. Would cut in half. The Shepherd and Scarborough subway lines would be shut down entirely. Streetcar major bus service half as frequent, roughly every 10 to 20 minutes. We have a 73.6 million reduction to Wheel-Trans services, eliminating 4 million Wheel-Trans rides per year. Toronto Fire Services Department, 23 million. The Police Department, 31 million. 40 million cut to child care subsidies, eliminating 4,625 subsidies to families. And the list just goes on. I mean, you certainly can read it. It's been devastating. And we're hoping that at the end of the day, when we come out of COVID-19, we're going to be in a healthy situation, not only us, but the whole GTA region. And that way we can come out of it, I would say, it could take a couple of years, and hopefully that we'll all look back at this and have a good laugh, and we won't have as many people die anymore. Thank you.
Perfect. Yeah, next up is Tourism Toronto.
Hi, everyone. Matt McNamara here. I hope you're all doing well. So thank you for inviting me here, of course, and for sharing all the insight. That was great. So I'll just share the tourism perspective. And, you know, I don't have to speak to the GTA and the Consultative Committee about the impact of borders being closed. Certainly, we're all very much aware of that impact. But there's really two main facets to how COVID-19 has affected tourism. And number one is the industry collapse. Occupancy levels in hotels are currently in single digits. Traditionally, this time of year, we'd be looking at around 88-89% occupancy. Now we're looking at 89% occupancy, which is, of course, a significant drop. Attractions are closed and operating virtually. Restaurants and bars are either closed permanently or temporarily, or operating takeout and pickup services only, and a shift towards local only. So, you know, no longer looking at those incoming inbound international visitors, which is obviously impacting their businesses. From Tourism Toronto's perspective, let's take a look back at the last 90 days and say that, you know, some of the immediate things we did was a market shift. We stopped all market activity and agreements, as obviously inbound travel wasn't going to be a factor for the foreseeable future. And as you all know, tourism is a lot more than leisure. People here for friends and family and vacations. Business events are severely impacted right across the board, with events being canceled throughout all of 2020. So from Tourism Toronto's perspective, we're focused on ensuring that those 2020 meetings are rescheduled as opposed to canceled. We've all efforts in terms of community engagement, supporting a community that's obviously deeply impacted. You know, tourism was the, well, hospitality in general was the industry that was, you know, hit hardest immediately. And it's probably the industry that will last the longest in terms of the greater impact. So we're supporting our community as much as possible, hosting webinars, becoming a resource for them, and ensuring that they have the support they need to access government support. And as we kind of look towards the future, we look at recovery planning. As the city's destination marketing organization, Tourism Toronto plays a vital role in terms of ensuring that we're marketing the city. Of course, that will, of course, involve, you know, looking at a locals first perspective. We, you know, Lori and her team were talking about that earlier, and getting people moving is going to start with people in our city first and the drive market, and expanding from there. So we're going to play a key role in that. From an organizational perspective, like many of you, Tourism Toronto has been affected very deeply. We have a staff reduction of about 55% now, with many employees furloughed for the time being. We're shifting our resources and holding on to them in order to focus on recovery down the line, as we have, you know, we work towards secure funding. So we'll leave it there. If there's any questions, of course, I'm happy to answer anything.
Okay, Jonathan, you're up next.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for giving me the chance to say a few words here. Good to see you, Michael and Ingrid, and Laurie again. So for my presentation here, as you can imagine, the region, as many of you have been experiencing, significant and far-reaching impacts of the COVID situation. So on the slide that I've got here, I'm going to cover a few perspectives. So from the corporate perspective, as of April 30th, the expenditures were still there. We were at 96.8% of our expected expenditures, but at the same time, the region had experienced nearly $26 million in unexpected costs. So, and reduced revenues. So you can see the impact from both the expenses staying high and revenues falling. So we are, just as the City of Toronto explained, in a cash crunch situation. That said, staff continues to work from home, and business or development applications are coming into our planning and economic development team to be advanced as normal. Impact on our business community is also significant, and we have embarked on an economic impact study, which will get some of the outcomes towards the end of the year. And at the same time, we had a chance to look at the Stats Canada, the survey that was done with Statistics Canada and the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. We got a York Region slice of the data set. And what we've seen is 25% of small businesses in York Region saw a significant fall in their revenues. 34% of them were temporarily closed. But there was some good news there in that 43% of the businesses added new ways to sell to customers. So again, in the midst of crisis, you know, businesses do find opportunities. So that was really good to see. And, you know, in terms of responses to this crisis at both the regional and the municipal level, we've come together to form the York Region Business Recovery Support Partnership. It's a really good opportunity where all the 9 local municipalities, the boards of trade and the chambers of commerce, as well as the Workforce Planning Board of York Region and our Innovation Center Venture Lab have been working together to support businesses across the region. The local municipalities continue to do things like putting in place tax deferral programs as well as fee deferrals. So that's, you know, direct impact to the businesses right now. In terms of what's happening under the Business Recovery Support Partnership, some really exciting initiatives. One that is going to come to committee on Thursday is a report that is requesting $500,000 support to small businesses through the province's Starter Company Plus program that will be run through the 4 small business centers across the region. And that's going to be in front of committee for a decision June 25th. We also are ramping up our support in terms of market intelligence and data gathering for businesses through the Environics Analytics platform that we're using, where we support small businesses less than 20 employees with getting access to hyper-local market research data that helps them with better decision making, so that in times like this, they're better able to understand where their clients are, how they can tap into those clients and shore up revenues, you know, through this process. So that is work that we're doing right now going forward. And one other thing we're doing is we are on weekly calls with our GTA counterparts from the economic development perspective. We're having a lot of information sharing, talking about best practices and looking into the potential for joint projects to continue to support businesses. So that's what we've been working on at York Region. I'm ready to answer any questions if necessary.
All right, Stephen, over to you.
Okay, thank you very much. I hope everyone can hear me. Airport workers have seen better days than what have unfolded over the past few months. I'll be very brief because I think a lot of the economic impact has been covered by Lori. First of all and foremost is that I think COVID-19 has been described and can continue to be described as an airport disease. This is how it's been spreading from different countries. And this is where the testing points should be if we're going to contain it on an international level. And it's also where workers are are impacted, as well as those providing services at the airport. First and foremost, as a health issue, I think it's important to say that we've lost people to this disease. We've, at our count as of now, is about 13 workers from our YYZ community have died from COVID-19. We've had a number of infections. The number of flight attendants now still in quarantine across Canada is significant. It's not widely reported. Some of the deaths that have happened at YYZ that were reported were, of course, among the cab drivers that were infected. We had a woman who was working at a duty-free shop, an SEIU member, who passed away after contacting the disease, and she was still working when she had first contacted it. And, of course, the workers providing food for planes that have succumbed to the disease. So it has had a health impact. And there has been, to the GTAA's credit, significant movement on health and safety issues that we raised really almost immediately in March. And we were a little bit frustrated at the beginning. It was a fight to get plexiglass, but eventually we did get it. It wasn't all the GTAA. There were also issues with Public Health Agency of Canada who were not reporting if airport workers had been infected. There was no way of knowing if a coworker had been reported COVID-19 positive. And now we've actually worked with the GTAA, has been doing well in developing a logging and disclosing system for all employers in the airport. And in some cases, we're actually leading the world on this, these kinds of measures, and of course, the mandatory mask as well. So I think, in fairness, even though things were a little bit slow, something happened in April that really turned things on a dime, and that GTA moved quite quickly on things. We are asked, there has been a movement to increase pay for the workers that are left, and there's not that many of them. Again, the layoffs are in the tens of thousands, and they're going to be in the tens of thousands across the board at other airports as well. So our shift now is really to what to do with long-term unemployment for airport workers. And this is something that's actually going to be quite devastating as CERB expires, as CRUZ expires. Those are the wage subsidy and emergency benefit programs that we've heard about that airport workers are now relying upon. And those programs will expire. And what is it going to be the future for unemployed airport workers if recovery is, as Lori mentioned, probably a five-year recovery? Not all workers will be hired back quickly. Employment benefits will run out. This creates a crisis for workers. And so that's to deal with that. Workers are either going to go, and skilled workers are going to leave the sector and go to sectors that recover more quickly. And that's going to have long-term implications for the airport when it tries to retool and build up to what the passenger flow was like in 2019. And so one of the things we're still working on is creating a virtual resource center, and GTA has helped us with this, really collecting a lot of programs. Even now, we're in the process of training peer mentors, which actually can outreach affected workers and help them with things like the CERB program and accessing different services. We envision that we may even need a food bank for our airport workers in the coming months. So this is something that we're working on immediately, and I think the GTA should be commended for assisting with that and taking the lead. Now, from the workers' perspective, there's two things that we are really going to emphasize with the political response to COVID. One is that if there is going to be continued bailouts for airports and airlines, that some of that money has to go to workers, either in the form of collective supports or in the form of benefits. That's something that we feel very strongly about, that this should not be a bailout for specific companies at the expense of those people who have worked at those companies. And the second thing is, and I think Brittany mentioned this, we do see employers and airports adapting to this crisis by taking the opportunity to reduce labor. After all, let's be honest, robots don't get sick. That's one of the reasons why employers use them. Robots don't carry COVID-19 and take it home to their families. But when it comes to contactless boarding and different border modernization strategies, that also means a reduction of workers. And workers lose their jobs permanently, even with declining demand, and they'll never come back. And that's something that the Workers' Council, we want to see at that table, and we want to discuss how those programs are implemented and what would be a just transition for those workers affected in terms of redeployment or early retirement. So I'll leave it there. There's much more I could say. We have been publicly in the media talking about these issues, and I'd be happy to answer any questions as well.
Any questions of Stephen?
Hello, hi, this is Oscar. I have a quick question for Stephen.
Yes.
Hi, Stephen. Great presentation. I just had a question with regards to, trying to have the perception or the safety for passengers. And you mentioned some of the workers being infected or passing away, 13 of them. So is there anything in place to have some of these frontline workers tested, especially seeing how there could be a risk, let's say, with taxi drivers that could spread it if they still have it or have those, have the virus in them? Is there any plans on that?
That's a great question. And that's something we've, of course, inquired about. But the premier has commented on several times over the past few weeks, there has been a real difficulty in ramping up testing to the levels we need it to contain this disease. And airport workers are no one special in the queue to get tested, even though we have asked for that. In some cases, we're starting to see that around some flight attendants. But you have to have reason to be exposed before you are given a test, as in most cases. And we're not in the cases of LTCs or healthcare. We do not, our employees, frontline as they are, are not tested in that way, even though we feel they should be.
Okay. Thank you.
I think the next slide belongs to Walter from the City of Mississauga.
Great. Thank you, Michael. Walter Garrison, City of Mississauga Economic Development Office. Just to talk about our Economic Development Office, we've developed a COVID-19 response page. We've aggregated a lot of, for example, the municipal, provincial, federal support programs for businesses on that page, and our business community has been very appreciative of that. Again, we talk about different programs through our different channels that are available to companies. We've done a lot of outreach. We've launched our outbound advisory services where we're talking to companies one-on-one. We've conducted our industry sector and mayor's roundtables with our businesses. Essentially, what we're doing is asking, what are the effects of COVID-19 been on your business, which you've very well articulated with respect to the GTAA, Lori, Michael, and Brittany. We've done mayor's roundtables as well, too, and I'll defer to Councillor Fonseca regards anything with respect to the city initiatives. We've done a lot of one-on-one consultations, and we have an advisory program for our business enterprise center for a bit smaller businesses. And of course, we're also trying to provide timely and up-to-date information via webinars for companies as to best practices, mitigation, what returning to work looks like for a number of our companies. Of course, Airport Corporate is the second largest employment zone in Canada after downtown Toronto. And the other thing is, of course, our aerospace manufacturing sector and MRO sector is extremely significant in the city of Mississauga, and we've been doing a lot of outreach with them and working with them. Of course, companies have been dealing with furloughs, supply chain issues, obviously, cash flow issues, so we continue to support our companies in whatever way we can, sharing best practices, B2B connections in order to help them go through this. The one comment I would make, it's very interesting that the CAC talks about 2024 is returning to the 2019 levels as far as travel goes. Certainly some of the people that we've consulted with that are around the world globally, and so it's not just looking at Canada, but globally, mentioned anywhere from 2023 to 2025, 2025 being the most pessimistic. So it's, I guess, in line with what we're hearing, and certainly the question of trust is something that we're trying to rebuild and want to do anything we can to help companies avoid any large-scale positive COVID-19 cases in the workplace. So I'm happy to take any questions, and thank you very much.
I know. Thanks for that, Walter. I know we had a placeholder too for Councillor Fonseca to speak. So I don't know, Councillor, do you want to add your remarks at this time? Probably makes sense for you to speak here.
Sure. Thank you, Michael. And yes, I did not have the opportunity to put together a slide. I apologize. As Lori referenced right at the start, basically, I'm at back-to-back meetings on a regular basis. So anyway, just to build on or supplement what Walter has been saying, the City of Mississauga, and also with regards to the region of Peel and the City of Mississauga being in stage one has been a challenge, as has already been recognized in both Toronto and York region's presentations. But the City of Mississauga is providing leadership and support through the evolving stages of the crisis. And what I think the message to get across is right from the start, we have worked to collaborate and coordinate as much as possible with all of the different organizations, businesses, community leaders, out in the community, residents and businesses alike, through the mayor putting on a number of different roundtables for not only for through economic development with the business community, but also with sport organizations, with arts, with culture, with seniors, with youth, with faith-based groups. And also teletown halls, the next one being tomorrow evening. It's tonight at 6 o'clock. In this way, we have been able to, in the City of Mississauga, engage everyone and get input from everyone within the city, all the various stakeholders, try to collaborate and coordinate our supports as best way possible. We're also part of a two-tier government, so we work in conjunction with the Region of Peel Council and Peel Public Health and other government partners. We've also had two meetings with the MPs and MPPs to try to address and look to providing solutions and collaboration with what we've heard from the various stakeholder groups and residents and business communities, and to address gaps that we're seeing in that way through the local MPs and MPPs. We've established a website with different portals, and Walter mentioned one is specific to economic development. We also have one for seniors relief and senior supports. We also have, in general, a COVID portal website that gives the latest updates. It gives updates to residents and businesses on facility closures and reopenings, and supports that they can find there. At the same time, right from the start, we too have provided tax payment deferral for residential and commercial and industrial, as well as the waiving of any sort of fees associated with late payments and that type of thing. We've provided free transit, and we've worked through the Region of Peel to also defer stormwater tax, different utility rates. We've worked through Electra to help provide that to residents, as well as various social supports, opening up of which are just to be released, cooling centers, shelters, and as has been referenced, the support from the community and businesses in supporting the food banks, the local food banks, and the many different distribution food kitchens or pantries that are throughout the City of Mississauga and Region of Peel. We've done that. And this continues to be ongoing, and we are continuing to work in this next phase of reopening to support the community as much as possible, residents and businesses alike. We have also been a strong advocate through the mayor, who sits on the big city mayors at the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, as I know Mayor Tory is as well, and a number of other mayors, Mayor Brown, and through LUMCO, which is Large Urban Mayors, and AMO, to advocate for emergency operating funding for municipalities, which we are in much need of. We are not in quite the same position, drastic situation that's been explained as Toronto is, but we will be seeing by year's end over $100 million basically bleeding out of that money, and we want to make sure that we can support in reopening the best way possible residents, businesses, and employees in the city of Mississauga and throughout the region of Peel. One thing I will say, and to extend a big thank you, and it's been just incredible and overwhelming, is how the community and different businesses and organizations and individuals have pulled together to stand up for the most vulnerable in our communities. It's just been absolutely incredible. So we continue to make sure that we stay connected, to thank them and make sure that their needs are being met as well. And also to all of the frontline workers, whether you are working at the airport, whether you are working in the hospitals, whether you are emergency response, a huge thank you out to you. Because I think at some times we can get caught up in the fact that we are in our own little bubble of trying to provide support. And at the end of the day, all of you are responding. You are just out there responding with the frontline needs that the community is facing through this pandemic. So I don't know if there's any questions, but that's a general update. I do think I passed along the link that we have at the City of Mississauga on our website that provides updates, many more details as to the updates for as to how Mississauga is addressing COVID.
Perfect. Thanks so much. Any questions for Councillor Fonseca or Walter? I think we kind of skipped over Dave Parkwell.
Thanks for the opportunity to speak to the committee. As one of the resource members, NAV Canada plays a role in providing air traffic control across the country, not only in Toronto, but air traffic control from coast to coast. From here at the control tower, we move air traffic in and out of this airport, but from a building on the airport, we also provide air traffic control for overflights over the entire province of Ontario, essentially. We've seen traffic declines as the airport has, of around 85%. As a not-for-profit company, we are dependent on those revenues. So we had two responses. First, the initial response at NAV Canada was to sustain the service. It's a critical air navigation service. We are deemed essential. So we did take steps to make sure we can continue the operation. First and foremost was taking care of the employees that work here at the airport. All the usual things that all the other businesses have taken, like enhanced cleaning protocols and sending people home to work from home who could do that, and using Skype or Teams or whatever we have. And for everybody that does have to come to work, we put them into crews so that only a certain crew will come into the building at any one time, and we can manage contact and do contact tracing if required, based on how many people were here and who has been here. We are essentially in a continuous midnight operation with the minimum number of sectors open to ensure that all of our customers and cargo receives air traffic control service. Happy to say there's been no interruption in service in the Greater Toronto Area from an air traffic perspective. Looking ahead, how we're going to recover and get back into a full operation. We're using a traffic projections very similar to what Laurie described. We think we're going to have about 50% of the traffic volume by the end of the year after Christmas this year. we think we might be up to 75% by the end of next summer. So in that short time frame, we're kind of in line with what the airport is expecting. So trying to get back to work, we're going to phase in our employees back to work, consistent with the traffic levels. As traffic increases, we'll have to bring in more people, following the regional health public guidelines, of course, and the city guidelines. We're going to look for opportunities to reduce other spending to stay financially and fiscally secure. We have taken steps to ensure our financial liquidity in this reduced revenue time frame, such as going to the bond market. We have borrowed $850 million to keep us going for a while. And exploring government subsidies, the wage employee wage subsidy was we submitted a submission for that anyway. So those are the things we're looking ahead and how we're going to recover from this COVID incident. Open to any questions you might have.
Looks like Ludwig, you have your hand up.
Yeah.
Hi, Dave, it's Ludwig.
Hi.
Just those numbers again that you just threw out, 50%, what was that? 50%? Go ahead.
This is our, so we don't count passengers, we just look at airframes or traffic, the IFR traffic, and this is what we're basing our revenue and our recovery plans on for the number of people we'll need at work. So I'm saying 50% we're looking at by the app. So in that after December, January timeframe, we'll be back to 50% of our traffic. As Lori said, we had, or was it Michael, we had 1,300 general movements a day in April last year, and this year we just had, what, about 150? So we think we might get to about 500 or 600 movements per day. That's arrivals and departures here at Toronto Pearson, about 500 a day after Christmas, and maybe 800 or to 900 by the end of next summer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That would be me. Can everyone hear me?
Heather, we can hear you.
Okay, great. Wonderful. Thank you very much. So my name is Heather Craig-Petty, and I'm the Vice President of Advocacy and Member Relations at the Association of Canadian Travel Agencies, or ACTA. In the following two slides, I will share in share with you in the 2 to 3 minutes that was allocated a summary of what ACTA has lobbied for, both federally and provincially, and sector specific aid for travel agencies. ACTA has made it clear to the government that urgent sector-specific aid is required to support travel agents and agencies through the COVID-19 pandemic. We've explained that travel agents and agencies are a critical component of both the tourism and airline industries. When the government imposed the travel advisories, our travel agents spent countless hours working to get people home, and doing so with zero to negative revenue. An important fact as we lobby the government for sector-specific aid is while annual travel agency sales are estimated at $30 billion, the annual travel agency revenue is $3 billion, for an approximate 10% margin. So the travel industry, it was one of the earliest and hardest hit industries with the government imposed travel advisories. Now with 90% of the 24,000 travel agents in Canada currently unemployed, ACTA's ask of government is immediate support of our industry. We will also need support in the recovery of our industry. Whereas hair salons, nail salons, and restaurants will rebound as doors reopen, we know that the travel industry will lag behind in recovering, in part due to travel advisories still in place, closed borders, airline routes not operating, and cruise ships grounded. So if you can just go to the next slide.
So ACTA is asking the government for help. For travel, for our travel agency businesses, ACTA is asking for immediate support in the form of forgivable grants or zero or low interest loans until December 31 of 2020, so the end of the year, due to the industry's booking and revenue collection pattern. The waiver of taxes for 2020, not just a deferral, and the continuation of the wage subsidy program to the end of the year. With the commercial rent assistance program, whilst developed in good intentions, this program has many flaws. Feedback from our travel agencies is that the majority of landlords are not interested or willing to apply in the program. What we are asking for is that the relief is made available directly to the tenant and for a longer period than 3 months. And once again, the government's extended avoid all non-essential travel advisory has put a financial strain on travel agents and independent travel agents. Without an extension of the Canada Emergency Relief Benefit to the end of the year, many will face significant economic hardships long after other businesses have reopened. Many travel businesses do not expect business to return to 2019 levels until well into 2021 or even 2022. And now, from the sounds of what Lori is projecting, it could be much longer. Thank you.
Heather, it's Lori. I'm just curious, you've mentioned the rent issue and the fact that the commercial rent program is not being picked up. I think it was yesterday the Premier announced a ban on commercial evictions. Mm-hmm. Is that a benefit to some of your members? Is that helpful?
No, not really. From what I'm hearing, some of the commercial property owners are willing to see it out. Because this is only for 3 months. And so dependent on how long that eviction is going to last. I mean, we know that it was in place in some of the provinces anyway. I mean, not an outright ban, but in Ontario, I understand that they just weren't going to enforce it. So one case I just sent up to CMHC is that we've got cases where the commercial landlords are almost handcuffing the tenants if in the case where, say, a lease is coming due, they will not subscribe until they a lease and it has a 20% increase. So there's all kinds of stories. And when we did a survey of our members, 62% of the engagements between the travel businesses and their landlord, the landlord was not interested or willing to participate in the program. So it really, it's, I'm not saying it won't help, but it not to the extent that maybe everyone else is excited about it.
Okay, thank you for that. I think that is the end of the slides that were shared with us in advance. I just want to open it up to see if any other members care to jump in at this point and add additional comments before we move to the roundtable.
Lori, we do have a couple of slides.
Oh, my apologies. Okay, so who's up next?
Yeah, this is Sabir Sayed from Region of Peel.
Go for it.
Yeah, so I'm glad I'm speaking after our regional councillor, Grace Fonseca. Councillor provided an update on Region of Peel as well as City of Mississauga. So I'll be providing an update on transportation and goods movement. As you see the slide here, this slide shows the transportation trends, so traffic trends, from March to May 2020. It's very good to mention to you that we have got more than 32 permanent count stations installed in region of Peel. So we are getting 24/7 traffic data from these count stations through cloud. So this data shows the actual traffic pattern on some of our regional corridors. So you can see the travel pattern in city of Mississauga, city of Brampton, and town of Caledon. Just before the Ontario government declared a health emergency, you can see the traffic pattern here. So that traffic is down by 33% to 48% in many of our corridors. So this is a significant impact on the traffic. Next slide, please. And we have been working with our goods movement industry partners through our Peel Goods Movement Task Force. As you know, we have established a smart freight center with three universities, so University of Toronto, York University, and McMaster. So we have been working with various business partners to implement province's 24-hour truck delivery, off-peak delivery program. We are working with various industry partners to promote e-commerce, and I'm glad to hear that Toronto Pearson Airport has seen significant increase in air cargo traffic. So we have been working with various partners on the goods movement side as well as on transportation side. So this completes my update from Region of Peel. Thank you.
Great. Thanks very much, Sabira. My apologies. All right, Michael, we have another slide. Yes.
One more, I believe.
One more. All right, Ministry of Tourism.
Yeah. Am I the enviable person between everybody and their dinner?
No, that's all right. We've got time.
So I will go very, very quickly. I even said to Ingrid, I'm not sure that anything that I'm going to say is a new or an update or something that people already don't know. I work for the tourism piece of the Heritage, Sport, and Cultural Industries Ministry. So we look at ourselves as the economic drivers for the other assets. So the Heritage, Cultural, and Sport assets, our minister and ministry has been trying to ensure that the assets are here, and all of our assets, our hotels, our transportation assets are here when this is all over. So that's really been the focus of our efforts. Right when this first came down, the minister got out immediately and did some on the ground, got some feedback from all across the province. So my division, we work in regional services, and our job is to really talk about the regional disparities and making sure that they don't try and put forward one-size-fits-all solutions, and recognizing the vast differences between what's going on in Toronto and Pearson and downtown, even to Ottawa and then out into the far more rural areas and up and into the north. The minister put through her 10-point plan early on that really just ensured a lot of people in our ministry and in our industries that the existing program money was going to continue to flow regardless of what was going on. And she has kept that commitment, and those monies are starting to flow. She's added an extra $1 million into one of our programs, and she's really just trying to champion to get other dollars in, but really seeing what's going on at the federal level. There's a variety of other initiatives, I don't need to read them there, but that she continues to work on in her broad portfolio. She continues to stay connected with the industry through town halls, where there's one tomorrow. She will give an update. And Lori's already spoken about the tourism advisory panels. There's 14 of them, representing the fact that our industry is super horizontal and really, really, really diverse. And I think she's done a wonderful, wonderful job, and the ministry is working very, very hard to talk about sort of the social impacts of our industry as well as the economic impacts of our industry. And if portions of our industry don't make it through the or suffer through this, it has not just an economic impact, it has a social and community impact as well. I think everybody knows the standing committee presentations, and a few people have spoken on them, and Lori was there as well giving a presentation. And we are already seeing some impacts. The message is coming through, and it's for the first time in my history of this industry, and I'm not going to tell you how many years I've been on it, but I've been at the ministry for 14 years, and I was in private sector before that. This is probably the most cohesive and focused message I've ever seen in a government relations effort from our industry, from tourism. So quite proud of the industry as a whole. We'll continue to work and try and get what we can to get that message up to the federal levels, continue working on with international counterparts as well. So that's really just, you know, our focus is making sure that we understand what the different needs are and trying to get those messages up as best we can and as clearly as we can what the needs are, and certainly the needs were talked about plentiful on this call.
Yeah, thanks very much, Caroline. I mean, I've got to say, Minister McLeod has been unbelievable in terms of the effort and the focus and the drive that she's put behind supporting the tourism sector as part of her ministry's efforts. I mean, managing 14 panels and the 14 sets of submission, I just know in terms of the work that we did as an aviation sector to put together our recommendations, it was a fair amount of legwork. And she never missed a phone call. And I know she was doing 13 other panel phone calls as well as the cross-sectoral ones that she was participating in. So she's been a huge advocate for our sector, and so really appreciate that work. And I know she's probably kept ministry officials running just as hard, so appreciate the effort that you and your colleagues have been putting into it. We did find out today that we had put our name in to appear before the standing committee, and we did hear today that we've been invited to appear next Thursday, so we'll be going forward to share our thoughts related to the airport portions of the panel submission.
Yeah, I will just add to that, the submissions that have gone in to date, I don't know if that includes the one you just talked about, but there's been 144 presentations from the broad sector, and it is a record in the legislature, the history of the legislature. So they're getting the message that the industry is hurting and that we need help, and we're beyond helping ourselves because of, you know, the world that we live in right now. So the message is certainly getting through.
That's good to hear. All right. So, Michael, am I safe now?
You're safe.
Okay. So that concludes the updates from folks who sent in slides. Again, I'm about to see if there's any other members that have any updates they would like to share. All right. Then that will move us to our roundtable. Given the sort of roundtable we've just done, albeit COVID related, I think for many of us, that's probably all we do these days is talk about restart recovery and dealing with the impacts of COVID. So there's a couple members I haven't heard from, so maybe I'll go to them first. So Savik, any updates from the college system that you would like to share with us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. A couple of things, and it's been a bit of a challenge for the college forecasting the fall intakes. We have at Seneca and a couple of the colleges, Confederation and I think Sioux College, have decided not to take an intake of flight students in the fall, which is first time ever. And that is focused on the backlog of flying we have. We have close to 4 years of students in the backlog right now. And if we take a fifth in, it would just create a really difficult challenge for the college to drive through. So we have, for the flight degree program, we're not gonna have an intake in the fall. Obviously, jobs are passe for most graduating students. You know, we believe strongly that education, post-secondary education, is a strong field to stay with. It's very positive for me to hear 50 and 75% recovery within a year. You know, localized, obviously, with Toronto being what it is.
So versus 2023 or 2025 globally. So, you know, it's a challenge. It's going to be a really big challenge for all of us. Our biggest challenge is going to be to get visas for international students to bring into the college. And I know that's not just us, but a whole bunch of different people with travel bans and different things. We've moved online. Obviously, there are challenges with some courses, which can be done online, lifeline, like certain computer labs and things like that. But everything else, I'd say close to 80% of our college is online. So it's been like everything else, you know, in the aviation world, we are fires, and we're putting out fires right now, and we're trying to keep moving forward. But that's the update for us at this time. I mean, it seems to change daily, weekly, monthly, and I really appreciate the fact staying engaged. I'm really glad that we're able to get this meeting in today, Lori. Appreciate your help and the work with the GTAA.
No, it is good to keep getting together, and it's amazing how innovation can move so quickly. I was talking to one of my colleagues very early on, and I mean, even as a company, small things like we've never done a payroll remotely before, and yet we were able to figure that out. I say we, I mean, I had nothing to do with it, just for the record, but I was happy to get paid. But you do what you can when you are faced by these situations. Really hard to hear about there being no intake of students coming into the fall, Savik. That's really challenging. I did hear someone at U of T talking recently about a move afoot to try and work with governments to try and bring in foreign students. And so I'm happy to connect you if you're not already part of that conversation about how that might work, because I think that's a part of what we want to make sure we're still feeding our aviation sector and making sure that we are bringing in students for the future, because that will be our future.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. But yeah, we're pretty well engaged, and I know there's lots of different avenues being explored and challenges, but thank you very much. If I do need it, I will reach out.
Okay, perfect, no problem. I think also we have a couple of our resident members on the phone today, and so Shane Raymond or Daryl Shipp, either of you have any updates for us or comments?
I don't have any updates. I'm still a resident of Toronto. I am not going into downtown Toronto as much. My work, I'm quite fortunate, can be carried out from home and with very little inconvenience, as I've learned. I do, however, want to wish all the members of this committee well. It's been on my mind quite a bit since this began, how it's having an absolutely tremendous impact on the travel industry and on our airport. And it's something where I really hope the situation improves soon. And if any of you can ever think of any way I could assist with anything, it's something I care about and would like to assist with in the future. That's all that I have to say for now.
Great. Thanks very much for that. Daryl, anything from you?
Nothing further than beyond what's already been said by everyone. Obviously appreciate the frontline work that's been done by everyone, both sort of in the scene and behind the scenes. I decided in the end of February to resign from my job in real estate, looking for better opportunities beyond what I was currently doing. And I obviously spent a fair bit of time in and out of the airport on a weekly basis, flying every city seemingly in the U.S. So that's a different change that I'm looking forward to exploring more once the world continues to open up, and just want to extend my gratitude and thanks to everyone on this call. And if anyone has any real estate related questions or concerns I can help with, specifically the travel agent regarding lease discussions and obviously tenants' rights, I'm happy to help out as well.
That's a great offer. Thank you. I'll let Heather, you pick up on that if that's helpful to you. So Ludwig, I think maybe you might get the last word. I know you've asked a few questions, but you haven't shared an update with us, so I'll turn it over to you.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I just want to begin by
letting you all know that these are definitely extraordinary times that we're living in. And I just can't believe how we have all adapted to a world that has absolutely changed our lives completely, and we now work in that world. I want to send out my sincere thoughts and condolences to all those who have fallen to this virus at YYZ. I must say, on behalf of the Government of Canada, we deeply regret all of that happening. My hat's off to you, the GTAA, to all of the staff at the GTAA for just stepping up to the plate and, as we have in the past, given the professionalism that's necessary to ensure that the Band-Aid for Transport Canada continues to live on through the kind of work that the workers and management at Toronto Airport, Toronto Pearson Airport, do day in and day out. I must say, as a member of the Coordination and Policy Advice Team here in Toronto, I'm just a small cog in the wheel. But I do know from being connected to a lot of the national groups up there in Ottawa that work is definitely underway. We at TC, we remain committed to our top priority of safety and security of all Canadians and of Canada's transportation system, as well as ensuring the continued flow of essential goods and services that we Canadians have come to expect over time. TC continues to work with the Public Health Agency of Canada and all of our federal, provincial, territorial, municipal, regional government partners, our stakeholders, and all the Indigenous peoples and all the workers around Canada in the transportation system to reduce the risk of transmission of this terrible virus in this terrible pandemic times. We are not accepted at Transport Canada. Our approach to aviation and to the kinds of measures necessary in this particular sector are posted. I've sent you a link in our chat. You're welcome to go through it at your leisure, at your time. They are quite significant. It's a big concern to us. I, as a regional team member, sit on Regional Airports Group here in Ontario. I also sit on SOAN, the Southern Ontario Airports Network. And I can tell you the impacts from COVID-19 have impacted each and every airport. Some have closed for business. Others remain open just because they've got to pay for the lights and the energy and all of the fees that are associated with running an airport. Whether it's Niagara Falls, whether it's Kingston, whether it's Lake Simcoe, whether it's up north that is now opening up with exception from Transport Canada provided to fight fires. It's critical, and the role that each and every airport has played in stepping up to the plate and ensuring the kinds of protections necessary where workers and staff and passengers and goods movement take place through various conduits and various gates and various channels. People are not interacting with each other, but the business of moving people and goods continues. So I want to say that, you know, our federal support has been quite far-reaching, as you all are aware. Our Prime Minister has made a significant number of announcements over the course of time. They've touched almost every person in this country, and some are still to be touched by the kind of care that's necessary to be given during these difficult times. We at TC have issued a series of interim orders. We continue to issue them based on our engagement with the stakeholder communities involved in the aviation sector. But that's not all we look after. We look after the marine sector, we look after the rail sector, we look after the transportation of dangerous goods. We also look after a whole new sector of innovation, from drones and Hyperloop and new ways of moving goods and services across this country. The work continues for Transport Canada throughout all of this crisis. So there will be new Government of Canada directives coming out. I want to end by wishing you all well. I hope that you all stay healthy. I hope that these times will pass, and out of every difficult, traumatic experience comes lessons learned. And I know that YYZ whether through the professional staff, through the workers, and through the larger stakeholder community around Pearson, we'll all rise up to the challenge, and I'm there to offer any support and information that you need from the Government of Canada and from Transport Canada. Thanks, Lori, for this opportunity.
Great. Thank you so much, Ludwig, and appreciate your words. I mean, there's no question that we count on the support and the guidance from Transport Canada as we're managing through this. We work closely with you and your colleagues. We work closely with CBSA, and we've gotten to know PHAC in ways we never knew we needed to before, but we do now. And so we do count on the support from the Government of Canada and all the partners on the call today. So thank you very much. I think the quote of the day is, you know, we will get through this all together, and it's better knowing we're all together in this, and that's helpful. So unless anyone has anything further, I think my only other message to you all is we do have two more meetings on the books for the, I don't know whether those will be in person or whether they'll be on Teams platform again, but they're September the 15th and December the 1st. So unless there's anything further, it's now 6:04, so I do need a motion to adjourn. If I just see a hand up, I'll take that as a motion. Nobody wants to go for dinner?
Oh.
All right. Shane is moving it, and Saeed or Sabir has seconded it. Everyone else, thank you so much. Have a great evening, and I look forward to talking to you all soon.